The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're doing a deep dive, and if you hear folk music and, I don't know, picture someone singing dusty old ballads on a porch, well, get ready.
Yeah, this is going to shake things up a bit. We're exploring Mark Sloban's folk music, a very short introduction, and it really tackles this fundamental question. What on earth does folk music even mean today, you know, in our super connected globalized world?
Okay, let's unpack this, because the core idea here is that we need to stop thinking about folk music as like a static thing, a collection you'd find in a museum.
Exactly. Sloban wants us to see it as an active, ongoing process. It's less about the specific songs and much more about the how and the why, how communities create and share music to basically say, this is who we are.
It's a pretty big shift. And understanding why he argues this means knowing a bit about Mark Sloban himself. He's a major figure in ethnomusicology.
A giant, really. And ethnomusicology, just quickly, is about studying music in its cultural context. It's not just the notes, it's the people, the place, the meaning.
Right. And Sloban's perspective is so valuable because he wasn't just, you know, theorizing from an office. He's got this incredible breadth.
Uh-huh. He was the Winslow Kaplan Professor of Music at Wesleyan. He's a top authority on music from Afghanistan and Central Asia, but also on klezmer music. That's the traditional music of Ashkenazi Jews in Eastern Europe.
So he spent decades out there actually studying what he terms micromusics, these really specific local music scenes.
Yes, exactly. Books like Subcultural Sounds, Tenement Songs. They come from that deep on-the-ground experience. So when he talks about folk music, he brings this this global critical eye to a term that's often used pretty loosely, especially in the West.
Okay, so that groundwork lets him build this really powerful new way of looking at things.
Which gets us to the book's main argument, the big paradigm shift. He's saying folk music isn't this fixed category of old, rural, anonymous stuff. It's alive. It's a dynamic cultural force, rooted in how communities build their identity.
And to get there, he first has to kind of clear away the old ideas.
Precisely. He starts by dismantling that romantic 19th century European notion of the Volkslied, the people's song. This idea, you often hear it traced back to the German philosopher Herder.
Oh, right. The idea that these songs were the pure, like, uncorrupted voice of the nation, the Volksgesang.
Exactly. The national soul captured in music, which, you know, sounds nice. But Sloban points out it was often tied up with nationalism, defining who was in and out.
And it just doesn't work today, does it? With global migration, the internet, cultures mixing constantly.
It completely falls apart. The idea of a pure, isolated culture expressing itself through one static folk style, it's just not reality. So the old model that's symbol, folk, pop, classical triangle, it's inadequate.
So he needs to replace it. He's building a new framework, something that can actually handle the complexity we see all around us.
Yeah, and in chapter one, he really lays out this historical baggage, how those old romantic ideas led to these simplistic divisions, folk versus art, rural versus urban, authentic versus commercial.
Divisions that often seem a bit, well, condescending towards the folk, making them seem simple or unchanging.
Totally. And once he's cleared that ground, he introduces his core analytical tool in chapter two. This is really the heart of the book. The four fields model.
Okay, this sounds important. How does it work? It's supposed to help us map out music and culture, right?
Yes. Think of it like nested spheres of influence, a kind of force field acting on any musical activity. Let's try an example. Imagine, say, a group of friends in a big, diverse city creating a new sound.
Okay, got it. So the biggest sphere.
That's the superculture. This is the dominant force, the government, the huge media companies, major record labels, streaming giants. They set the mainstream norms, the commercial logic. Our little band has to exist in a world shaped by, you know, pop charts, blockbuster movie soundtracks, the whole industry machine.
Makes sense. So inside that,
you have the interculture. This is the zone where different cultures meet, mix, sometimes clash. It's the diverse city itself, maybe the local indie music scene, or even the global world music market where sounds get traded and translated. This is where our group might jam with someone from a totally different background, creating something new, or maybe even pushing back against influences.
Okay, the contact zone. And then closer to home.
The subculture. This is where you find those micromusics. Music tied to a really strong shared identity could be based on ethnicity, religion, neighborhood, even being fans of the same local sports team. This music strengthens the bonds within that group. This is where that traditional idea of folk music for the group, by the group, really lives.
And tying it all together.
Is the individual at the very center. Each one of us navigates these fields, chooses what resonates, and creates our own personal soundscape, our own musical idiolect, influenced by all three levels.
Wow, okay. That's a much richer way to think about it than just folk or pop.
It really is. And once you have this framework, you can start to analyze things like, say, music and migration. Chapter 3 looks at how, for communities scattered in diaspora, music often becomes this kind of portable homeland.
Like his work on klezmer, that music traveled with Jewish migrants from Eastern Europe.
A perfect example. It's a subcultural music, carried across continents, then adapted and revived, particularly in America. Using that intercultural space, new instruments, new contexts, it becomes a powerful symbol of Ashkenazi identity, even for people generations removed from Eastern Europe itself.
And you see similar dynamics in the folk revival, right? Chapter 4.
Absolutely. Slobin frames the 20th century revival in the U.S. and U.K. as a classic intercultural interaction. You had urban collectors, activists, part of the interculture, looking for authenticity.
And they often found it in marginalized rural subcultures, like Appalachian singers.
Right. But there's a tension there, always.
Yeah.
The revival brought vital attention, maybe saved some traditions, but it also tended to, well, simplify them, romanticize them, and then repackage them through the superculture, the record labels, the festivals.
So visibility comes at a price, maybe losing some of the original context or complexity.
Often, yes. Mm-hmm. It's that intercultural negotiation. And you see echoes of that today in the world music industry. And now, of course, you throw the internet into the mix.
Ah, chapter 5, the digital age.
Yeah. YouTube, streaming. Technology allows music to spread instantly, globally. Our little band doesn't even need to be in the same physical place anymore. They could form a virtual subculture with members on different continents, united purely by taste.
So the platforms changed dramatically, but that fundamental need, the need to make music that says, this is us, that core process Slobin identifies.
It remains incredibly strong, just finds new forms, new channels.
Okay, so if we zoom out a bit, if we connect this to the bigger picture, what are the main takeaways here, the things that really shift your perspective?
I think there are three really core ideas that change how you even hear music.
Let's break them down. What's the first one?
The biggest one is folk music is a process, not a product. Think of it as a verb to folk music rather than a noun. The real value isn't necessarily how old a song is. It's the social act of making and sharing it, the way it builds community cohesion.
So like when you and your friends have that one song that's your song or an inside joke tied to some tune, that sharing, that connection is the process Slobin's talking about.
Exactly. It takes it out of the museum case. Which leads to the second point, tackling that tricky word, authenticity.
Yes, the A word. What does Slobin say?
He basically says authenticity is socially constructed. It's not some magical essence in the music itself. It's more like a stamp of approval, a badge of honor that a particular community gives to the music that resonates most deeply with their identity right here, right now. Okay, so if a community decides their authentic expression involves, I don't know, playing an ancient chant, using synthesizers.
Then it is authentic for them. An outsider saying that's not traditional is kind of missing the point. The community gets to define its own musical truth for its own time. It's quite liberating, really.
It really is. Okay, and the third theme.
It's about the complex interplay of tradition and innovation. Slobin stresses that traditions are never frozen. This idea of a pure, unchanging folk tradition, it's largely a myth.
Right. Real traditions are always evolving, absorbing new things, adapting to stay alive and meaningful.
Exactly. They have to change to stay relevant. Otherwise, they do just become museum pieces. This gives permission in a way for traditions to breathe and grow.
And Slobin has some really punchy ways of summing these ideas up.
Oh, definitely. That core distinction. We must stop thinking of folk music as a noun, a collection of objects in a museum, and start thinking of it as a verb. The active, ongoing process of a community making music for itself. That verb-noun thing is crucial. And his summary of the framework is so neat. Every community's music exists within a force field of influences. Understanding folk music means mapping its location within this field. Just nails the four-field concept.
And the one about authenticity is maybe the most challenging to old ways of thinking. Authenticity is not a quality inherent in the music itself. It is a badge of honor that a community bestows upon the music that speaks most powerfully to its own identity and values, takes the power away from external judges.
So putting this all together, How does this change things for us, just as listeners? How do we apply this?
Well, first off, you become a much more critical or maybe just aware listener. You stop just accepting labels like folk or world music at face value.
Right. So next time you're at a festival or hear a track labeled that way, you can ask yourself, okay, who's defining this? Which field is dominant here? Superculture marketing, intercultural exchange, a subculture expressing itself. What story is actually being told?
Exactly. And you can use the four-field model for yourself, too. Think about your own musical world.
Yeah.
What's your superculture soundtrack, the stuff everyone hears? And what are your real subculture musics? The songs your family always sings, the music you share with your closest friends or hobby group.
It makes you value those maybe smaller, more personal musical connections more.
Absolutely. It helps you appreciate the micro musics in your own backyard, the hymns at a local church, the chants at the football game, the songs at a community gathering. Slobin's framework validates these as important, meaningful musical practices, not just, you know, background noise.
So the big takeaway isn't about mourning some lost pure folk past.
Not at all. The lasting insight is that this process, using music to build identity and navigate the world, is fundamental and ongoing. It's part of the human brevet, constantly adapting. Slobin gives us the tools to see that clearly anywhere we look.
And it strikes me that these processes he describes, balancing tradition and change, figuring out local identity in the face of global forces, that's not just about music, is it?
That's a really sharp point. It's arguably about cultural survival in general in the 21st century. How do communities hold on to what matters to them while engaging with this huge interconnected world? Music is just one arena where we see that playing out.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Once you start thinking with this framework, those old neat boxes, folk, pop, classical, they just kind of dissolve, don't they?
They really do.
Yeah.
You stop seeing separate categories and start seeing these interacting forces, these currents flowing through this one big, complex, messy, fascinating cultural landscape that we all live in.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.